Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY25 earnings conference call of Sun Pharmaceutical Industries Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Dr. Abhishek Sharma, Vice President, Head Investor Relations and Strategic Projects. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening and a warm welcome to our second quarter FY25 earnings call. I'm Abhishek from the Sun Pharma Investor Relations team. We hope you have received our Q2 financials and the press release that was sent out earlier in the day. These are also available on our website. We have with us Mr. Dilip Shanghvi, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. C. S. Muralidharan, CFO, Mr. Abhay Gandhi, CEO North America, and Mr. Kirti Ganorkar, CEO India Business. Today, the team will provide an update on financial performance and business highlights for the quarter, pipeline updates, and respond to any queries, any questions that you may have. We will refer to the consolidated financials for management comments. The call recording and call transcript will also be put on our website shortly. The discussion today might include certain forward-looking statements, and these must be viewed in conjunction with the risks that our business faces. You are requested to ask two questions in the initial round. I also request all of you to kindly send in your questions that may remain unanswered today. I will now hand over the call to our CFO, Mr. C. S. Muralidharan.
Welcome and thank you for joining us for this earnings call after the announcement of financial results for the second quarter FY25. Our Q2 financials are already with you. As usual, we will look at key consolidated financials. Q2 FY25 sales were at rupees 132,642 million, an increase of 10.5% versus Q2 FY24, and an increase of 5.9% versus Q1 FY25. Besides the underlying business growth, we also had higher sales of lenalidomide in the U.S. in Q2 versus Q1. Material cost stands at 20.3% of sales, lower than the same period last year on account of better product mix. Staff cost stands at 18.7% of sales. Other expenses were at 32.5% of sales, higher year-on-year and Q1Q on account of higher selling and distribution expenses. Forex gain for the quarter was rupees 1,281 million, compared to a loss of rupees 341 million same period last year. EBITDA, including other operating revenues, was at rupees 39,390 million for Q2, an increase of 23.9% over Q2 last year, with EBITDA margins for the quarter at 29.6% against 26.1% for Q2 FY24 and 28.5% for Q1 FY25. Net profit after tax for Q2 FY25 was rupees 30,402 million, up 28% over reported net profit of Q2 last year. EPS for the quarter was rupees 12.7 per share. As of 30th September 2024, net cash was $2.6 billion at the consolidated level. Now we will discuss the off-year performance. For the first half, gross sales were at rupees 257,887 million, a growth of 8.4% over the first half last year. Material cost for H1 was at 20.8% of sales, lower than H1 last year, mainly due to product mix, including higher specialty sales. Staff cost stands at 19.1% of sales. Other expenses were at 31.7% of sales, higher than H1 last year on account of higher selling and distribution expenses. Forex gain for H1 was rupees 776 million, compared to a loss of rupees 321 million for the same period last year. EBITDA for the first half was at rupees 75,466 million, a growth of 15.9% over the first half last year, with resulting EBITDA margin of 29.1%. Net profit for H1 was at rupees 58,758 million, up 24.5% over adjusted net profit of H1 last year, excluding the exceptional items of H1 FY24. Now over to KP, who will share the performance of our India business.
Thank you, Murli. I shall take you through the performance of our India business. For Q2, the sales of formulation in India were at Rs. 42,652 million, recording a growth of 11% over Q2 last year. India formulation sales accounted for 32% of total consolidated sales for the quarter. Sun Pharma is ranked number one and holds 8.1% market share in the over rupees 2170 billion Indian pharmaceutical market as per AIOCD AWACS MAT September 2024. Corresponding market share for the previous period was 7.7%. A small note on the new AWACS market share series. From September 24, AIOCD AWACS has rebased its data, leading to lower market share reflections. Prior period data has also been rebased. Sun continues to show similar market share gains and volume-led growth in the new series. We are amongst the leading contributor to the volume-led growth of the IPM. In top 300 brands of the IPM, Sun Pharma has 28 brands, which is the highest number of brands by any company. For the quarter ending September 24, we grew higher than IPM and we have done well across all represented therapy areas. Majority of the Sun's growth continues to be led by volumes and new products launches versus IPM growth, which is predominantly price-led. As per SMSRC March-June 2024 report, we continue to be number one ranked company based on prescription volume. Sun Pharma is also ranked number one by prescription with 13 different doctor categories. For Q2 FY25, the company launched 14 new products in India. I will now hand over the call to Abhay.
Thank you, Kirti. I will update on the performance highlights of our U.S. businesses, which includes the U.S. portion of Taro as well. For Q2, our overall sales in the U.S. business was up by about 20.3% over Q2 last year to US$517 million. The U.S. accounted for over 33% of consolidated sales for the quarter. The U.S. specialty business has continued to do well and has grown over Q2 FY24. The underlying business and the prescription trend for the specialty business remains strong. For Q2, we launched two generic products in the U.S. I will now hand over the call to Mr. Sharma.
Thank you, Abhay. I will now provide an update on performance highlights of our other businesses as well as give you an update on our R&D initiatives. Our revenue in the emerging markets were at US$293 million, up by 3.2% over Q2 last year. The underlying growth in constant currency terms was 5% year-on-year for Q2. All our large markets, barring a few, have done well in local currency terms. Emerging markets accounted for 18% of total consolidated revenue for Q2. Formulation revenues in rest of the world were US$199 million, lower by 3.5% over Q2 FY24. Japan price cuts, as mentioned in the previous quarter, are an important reason for revenue decline in ROW. We expect this pressure to flow through next few quarters' performance. ROW markets accounted for approximately 12.5% of consolidated Q2 revenues. We continue to invest in building a R&D pipeline for both the global generics and the specialty businesses. Consolidated investments towards R&D for Q2 FY25 stands at ₹7,929 million, overall 6% of sales. Specialty R&D accounted for 38% of our total R&D spend for the quarter. Due to delay in the start of some of our clinical studies, our R&D spend is trending below our guidance for the full year. We expect our FY25 R&D spend to be in the range of 7-8% of our sales. Moving to updates on global specialty, in Q2 FY25, our global specialty sales were up by 19.2% to reach $286 million. Sun recently entered into a global licensing agreement for commercializing Fibromune, a specialty product from Philogen. Fibromune is an innovative anti-cancer immunotherapy which is being investigated in registration trials for the treatment of soft tissue sarcoma and subsequently for glioblastoma. With this, I would like to leave the floor open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. The first question is from Damayanti Kerai from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening and thank you for the opportunity. My first question is on R&D spend. So you mentioned delay in some clinical trials has led to lower R&D spend in first half. And then you mentioned 7-8% range for the full year. So do you think there will be significant uptick in second half R&D spend? And are you seeing pickup in clinical trials which are currently underway?
Yeah, I think the new guidance is based on our reassessment of the money that we will need to spend during the second half of the year. And we believe that, and we understand that for first half the spend is 6%. For us to reach 7 or 8%, it needs to go up by a corresponding number so that the annual number is reaching the guidance.
So, but any further delay or slow pickup in trials could keep your R&D lower, like at compared to like your anticipated level.
That is true.
Okay. My second question is on the litigation which you mentioned in your press release for Leqselvi. So, any timeline to look at the next update on the IP litigation front, and then. You can also please provide some update on your expectation for launch timeline for that product. Thank you.
Yeah, well, so we are awaiting the court judgment and really can't put a time to it, so we do not know, hopefully soon. And as far as the readiness for launch is concerned, post the judgment and depending on what that judgment is, you know, we would be ready to launch the product in the market.
Okay, but have you like done like sufficient preparation to launch immediately once the court ruling comes favorably, or it will take some time?
So it will be a couple of weeks, not definitely a couple of months. So to that extent, we will be ready.
Oh, thank you. I'll get back in touch.
Thank you. The next question is from Anubhav Agarwal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just making sure, am I audible properly?
Yes, Anubhav.
Okay, good. Good evening to all. Just first question is on Leqselvi litigation itself. I'm just trying to understand the scope of this litigation. So based on my reading, the litigation is mainly on 335 patent, where the expiry of this patent is December 26, which is like 2 years from now. So Two subparts to this question. One is the scope of litigation only for 2 years, or the scope of litigation is beyond the 2 years as well? That's one part of my question. And second part of the question is that in terms of worst case outcome, what is the worst case outcome here that is does Sun have to pay a higher royalty here, or you may not be able to launch the drug itself for 2 years?
So, as we understand the litigation, I think is the scope of the litigation is correct. I think the patent which they are using to litigate has an expiry date, and up to that is the worst case situation, is that in case if we get an unfavorable judgment and then even on appeal if we lose, then that is the time to which our potential launch gets delayed.
And Dilbhai, on the second part of the question, so is this more the worst case on the extent of royalty that you need to pay with a 10%, 20%, or is it like do not launch at all for 2 years?
No, I think generally royalty in such a situation would be subject to a settlement. It cannot be arbitrarily defined as to what would be the royalty and whether with a royalty we can launch or not.
Sure, that's clear. And
it's a binary outcome.
Understood. And the second question was on the Ilumya. Today, when you are in the Medicare Part B market, the medical benefit product, what percentage of prescriptions are you missing already because you do not have approval of psoriatic arthritis? So I'm just trying to understand. Let's say a year down the line, if the phase 3 results are good, you have the approval, what percentage prescription we are missing today and what we can get, roughly?
So, typically, if I look at the other competitors in the market and their data, and also from conversations with doctors, the split between psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis is somewhere, and you can use this as a ballpark figure, so don't hold me to it, is like a 70-30. So the 30% is the market you are roughly kept around with. And this is data that you can also validate in the public domain of the others.
Abhay, that's correct. But my question was that is Ilumya already being prescribed on off-label basis for those patients as well? So is the incremental gain not 30% or is it lower? Or your sense is that benchmark or heuristic benchmark 30% still valid for Sun as well?
I mean, Anubha, how do you expect me to, comment on any off-label use? So, I mean, when there are options,
we have no prescription from rheumatologists. Yeah. And if a dermatologist is prescribing for psoriatic arthritis, we wouldn't know. But most likely in the U.S. context, they won't prescribe.
Sure. And Anupu, you need to also appreciate that, if there are other products available whose label mentions a psoriatic arthritis, then the motivation of the doctor to use another product off-label is also very low.
Sure. My confusion was only on the Medicare Part B, where none of the other ILs are approved. That's where my question was.
I mean, I think I've answered the question with the best of my knowledge and above.
No, thank you, guys. This is helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Neha Manpuria from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. My first question is on Winlevi. Given the change that we had in strategy, you talked about it a few quarters back. If I look at the IQVIA data, obviously the trends seem to be, not reflecting that change. Are we seeing an improvement in Winlevi sales quarter on quarter? Is it in line with our expectation? And, what should we expect, in terms of when should we start seeing that prescription traction picking up, given that we've changed the strategy only a couple of quarters back?
So we did expect a fall in prescription post our change, which is what I think explained on the previous call as well. The focus was on generating a more profitable prescription. I think we've been able to achieve that. That's why the numbers are good. Now, on that lower base of prescription that we have, I think our task becomes to grow on that quarter on quarter.
And are we seeing that quarter on quarter, month on month improvement in terms of prescriptions?
Yes, I do see that.
Okay. And when do you think we get to, let's say, you know, a sustainable level of prescription that you would be happy about? Would it take us a couple of quarters, a couple of years? When do you think we get there?
Honestly, I'm already happy with the traction that we've seen. And if I'm able to grow the revenues with a more profitable prescription, then, you know, I'm already happy. But having said that, I mean, the idea is to continue to grow prescriptions in whichever product we market, not only in the U.S. but in any other geography. I don't have a set goal in mind that, you know, at this point I'll be happy.
Understood. Okay. And my second question is on the emerging market business. You know, if you could give us some color on what the focus markets are for us in, you know, the emerging market and how we're thinking about growth in that business, because it does tend to be fairly volatile. I understand currency is a big factor there, but otherwise, you know, which are the key focus markets and how we should think about growth in the EM?
No, I think we've already shared the key markets like Brazil, Romania, South Africa,
Russia
and
Mexico.
Yeah, I think those are there with you. And the focus would be to find a way to grow in this market. This, but at the same point of time, we have sales in many other geographies and many other markets. And all of them together make the emerging market business.
And sir, the focus in these markets would be growth over, you know, profit. Profitability, I mean, you know, because these are, you know, each of them are separate markets, you know, how should we think the growth versus profitability in these markets? Because there's a fairly large mix of markets.
So, the way our budgeting process works is that every country is expected to grow both top line as well as bottom line, irrespective of the size of the market. The focus from the business point of view would be that the corporate office, the business development team, as well as the priority for R&D resources would be allocated to these geographies before they are available to the other geographies. So that's the essential difference.
Understood. Okay, got it. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Bino Patiparampal from Elara Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Bino Patiparampal, you may go ahead with the question.
Am I audible? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. If I heard rightly, in the opening remarks, it was said that the lenalidomide sales in Q2 was higher than Q1. Is that correct? And could you also give some color why or why?
It was also higher year on year.
Okay. On the specialty side, this Fibromun, which we have in-licensed recently, I believe it's in registration trials. Any timeline regarding completion of those trials?
No, I think we've also indicated that the trial is managed by the principal from whom we have licensed the product. So, and they are a public company, so till they what you call disclose what is their timeline for filing. However, we have seen before we licensed the clinical outcome data, and we feel that it's an exciting opportunity for patients who are currently significantly undertreated for this disease.
Got it. And in for Euroglutide, Utiglutide, you were planning to start a phase two in second half of this year. Is that on track? Have you started it?
Yeah, no, I think if you see our disclosure, what we've said is that it will move to the first half of next year.
Okay, understood. Great. Thank you. I'll join back.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Surya Narayan Patna from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity. So, for first question is on the R&D spend. While we have become a bit aggressive about adding more and more specialty pipeline, and we had indicated about 8 to 10% kind of R&D spend, and now we are cutting down to 7-8% kind of for the current year. So how should one think whether it is because of the savings that is coming from the in-house capability, clinical capability, what you have indicated that you are building it up? So is a benefit of that, or it is just deferral of certain things that we have seen in the first half? That is a result of that is the number is reducing.
So what your question is, whether it's a intentional delay or whether it's a reason why, because of any other reason, the...
Yeah, I mean, whether it is the saving that is coming from the in-house clinical capabilities, what you are building it up. So that has brought in this kind of saving, or it is something else?
No, I think there is also delay in commissioning some of the studies. So it's not only in-house saving from managing the studies.
Okay.
Still a long time before we get to know whether there is any significant saving because of the change in the what you call organizational capability.
Okay. And the second question is on the U.S. sales growth. See, interestingly, sir, after many, many quarters, what we are seeing that overall the U.S. sales growth is higher than the global specialty sales growth. So generally, the reverse used to be the trend. That specialty...
We have not shared the U.S. specialties.
No, I mean, since U.S. is the majority of the global specialty. So the if I reframe that, U.S. sales growth is higher than the global specialty growth. The trend used to be the reverse trend used to be the kind of a trend. So what is driving this U.S. business? Because the base business, the plain vanilla generic, is obviously facing its own challenges. So what is driving, whether it is coming, something coming from the Taro side or any, what is driving the forces, if you can just indicate, and your outlook for the base business also?
I think the reason is, pretty obvious. Our major products, whether it is Ilumya, Winlevi, Odomzo or Equa, we have done well, and the team continues to perform and deliver. That's the reason.
See, my understanding, they're trying to reconstruct specialty and generic separately.
Yeah.
But in the past, they were doing because Taro numbers were public, so they were able to reconstruct. So now I think we need to internally debate and understand whether we want to share more information than what we are already sharing.
Sure, sir. Just one last update, sir. With this Chinese Ilumetri launch, whether we have seen any meaningful progress there, any influence that we can see to our... ROW sales?
I think we are very happy with the kind of traction Ilumetri has received in a relatively short period of time after launching the product in China.
Okay.
And we expect it to become a more meaningful product as the time progresses.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Sashank Krishnakumar from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. My first question was on the domestic piece. So when we're alluding to volume-led growth, would there be a meaningful difference in terms of volume growth across town classes that you're seeing in your portfolio? Would volume growth be meaningfully higher in metros and tier one towns for us as opposed to, say, class two to four towns and rural markets?
So broadly, it will be difficult to share whether it's higher in tier one, tier two cities compared to some metros. But what I can tell you, our volume growth is quite strong. And the volume growth for the industry is on MAT's September 24 basis is 0.7%. And we are 5.2%. So strong, and I see that is across the businesses. Maybe geography-wise, I don't have the data to share with you. But it is across the businesses.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. My second question was on SCD-044. So I understand that Amgen has received an approval for Otezla for pediatric use, and while this is an age group, there is no other approved option right now. So is that a patient population group that we could also potentially target?
Yeah, I think we are waiting for the phase 2 data to come, and then we'll decide whether the size of the, because many times agency also requires that on approval that you have to do a pediatric study to get the product approved for pediatric patients. And psoriasis as well as atopic dermatitis are both conditions for which there is a sizable number of pediatric patients. So in this case, there is a business case, but we have to take a decision looking at the phase 2 data. But in any case, most of the people that develop the product first for adult population and then go back to the pediatric.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from Anubhav Agarwal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I have two questions. One is on other expenses. So in this quarter, other expenses are pretty high. Just for trying to understand, is there any one-off here? For example, when you in-license Fibromin, have you paid some one-off milestone which is included in other expenses or any other one-off there in other expenses?
There is no one-off in the other expenses in the current quarter.
So what explains this almost 450 crore increase?
So this is mainly driven by the higher selling and distribution expenses in US and EM and certain other geographies.
So there would also be ramp-up costs for launching Leqselvi, and which are coming to the expenses for first time.
But would you say, Dilipai, that this is the new base of other expense for us?
I mean, generally we don't guide for expenses, but I think our focus would be to run the business most efficiently.
Sure. Second question is on Leqselvi. Actually, not just on Leqselvi drug, but on the alopecia areata market. So just trying to understand that when you, there are two existing drugs in the market and the ramp up has been slow in the last 2 years of the market formation. So out of the two factors which I can think of, just trying to understand which is a bigger factor, which is leading to a slow ramp of the market. One is insurance access or insurance coverage as factor one. And second is doctors' lack of willingness to write, prescribe this category because of the black box warning on the JAK inhibitor class. So out of these two factors, or maybe third or fourth factor, which you guys can help think about that, because when I see the two drugs on IQVI, I only see less than 15,000 patients being treated in total on this category. And that's what I meant by slow ramp up here.
So, see, in the US, access always builds up gradually. It is not that the day you launch, you will get unrestricted full access across all the payer groups. Some of them have a new to market block. So I think you should also look at access as a continuum rather than an event upon launch.
But I mean, is access the only reason why
No, not necessarily. See, one of the products also has multiple indications. It also depends on where a company may or may not focus. I cannot speak for anybody else. But our focus will be on growing both awareness as well as usage of our product in that indication. So waiting to get to market, and then we will see whether we can grow the market as well.
Sure. Very clear. One, just some clarity on the other expense question which I asked. Let's say when you include the milestone payment that you paid for Fibromin, where would you capture it? Would it be captured in the R&D expense, or would it be captured in the other expenses?
No, it's part of, not part of other expenses. It is part of the balance sheet item.
Part of the balance sheet item. But right. Have you paid anything for it so far?
So you provided for it based on the contract.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Vivek Agarwal from Citigroup. Please go ahead. Vivek, please go ahead with the question.
Hello.
Vivek, can you? Yes, please go ahead, Vivek.
Yeah, sure. So my question is related to your obesity molecule GL0034, right? You presented the phase 1 data in June 2023, and now you post the phase 2 trials in 2025, right? So it's more than 2 years, and the gap seems to be substantial, right? So just trying to understand why there is a big gap of 2 years, either you lack confidence in the asset, or are you looking to out-license the product to any big pharma to take it forward? So how to look at this asset? Thank you.
No, I think we are very excited. I don't know whether you kept track, but otherwise we've been consistently presenting the clinical outcome data both in healthy subjects as well as in patients. And I think we believe that we have a very, what I would call, best-in-class product. There is a certain amount of delay in terms of starting the large phase 2 study, but we hope that we will be able to make up as during the conduct of the study.
Understood, sir. And sir, is it also fair to understand that your R&D spend are expected to move up substantially once you start the phase 2 trial of this particular molecule, or irrespective of this particular molecule, we should expect R&D spend to go up substantially and to go up in the 8-9% kind of range?
Yeah, we will cover it in our guidance.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's from my side.
Thank you.
Next question is from Sayan Mukherjee.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So my first question is the intangible assets under development that we see has risen quite a lot in 6 months. So can you explain what is driving this?
So this increase in intangible asset development, as I just said now, is for the Fibromin product which we have contracted licensed from Surgeon.
Understood. And my second question is on, the psoriatic arthritis indication for Ilumya. Would this require approaching rheumatologists separately? I mean, I understand, do you need to make any additional investments for that indication?
So we will definitely have to cover the rheumatologists. Now, we're still trying to figure out how, I don't have a complete fix on what will we need to do. We still have time, but it's work in progress. But yes, we will have to cover the room segment definitely.
Okay, but is it possible, sir, to sort of license out or work with some existing player in that segment?
I don't think it will be necessary. I think on our own we'll be able to do a good job.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next question is from Rahul Jivani from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Sir, the sequential growth which we saw in the U.S. business, so apart from specialty and Revlimid quarter-on-quarter growth, was there any other driver which led to the growth in the U.S. business on a sequential basis?
I think in more ways than one, I've answered the question, but the last way I can attempt is year-on-year, the generic business, without Revlimid has shown growth, but quarter-on-quarter, it's a small decline.
Okay, so I was just trying to check that whether there were any one-off NBO opportunities sitting for us in the U.S. generic business this quarter. So that wasn't the case, I believe.
I don't think so.
Sure, sir, sure. And the second question which I had was on the domestic business. So can you talk about your rep expansion plans for the domestic market, given that, let's say, a year back we had added almost 1,000 new reps to the domestic business. So what are your rep expansion plans going forward? Thank you.
I think, yeah, I have shared in the past is like we have expanded our field force and today we have 14,000 people on the ground who are promoting product to the doctors. So about future plan, we can't comment it, but whatever expansion we had done in the past, I am thinking that it is helping us to grow faster than the market. Yeah.
Sure, sir. So just a follow-up on that. So do you think that the existing field force which we have, that can continue this volume-led outperformance for us in the domestic market? Or let's say, when do you anticipate the next round of expansion happening on the rep side, even if you are not willing to call out the exact number as such?
No, but that's what I said. We can't disclose our strategic plan when we want to expand in the business. These are the calls we take during our budget. So, yeah.
Sure, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from Madhav from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just two questions. First one was on the PSA indication. In case we get the favorable phase 3 data in H2CY25, what could be the earliest launch for the PSA indication for Lumia?
So the attempt always is that whether it's a launch of a new product or a new indication, I mean, you can only maximize your return if you're able to launch immediately after receiving it. We will always attempt to do it, you know, as soon as we get the approval.
My question was that in case the phase 3 data is favorable, what's the time gap between the phase 3 data readout and the approval? Is there like is there 6 months or 12 months before that happens, or the approval is that?
When the FDA will approve.
No, yeah, in case the phase 3 is favorable, yeah.
No, we will launch as soon as we get an approval in the new indication. And as I like I said for another product which was asked, it will be a matter of a few weeks and not a few months.
Okay, sure. Okay. And the second question was on the staff cost. In the first half, if I have it right, it's grown at about 3-4% only year over year. So do we expect that sort of trend to continue for the rest of the year, or do we expect some acceleration in the staff cost spending?
As such, we do not expect any material movement in the staff cost.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Naresh Sutar from SBI Life Insurance Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. When Taro used to announce results, the R&D cost was around $60-65 million that time. We have seen so many quarters they have not done good in terms of the US sales, which is good in, predominantly derma portfolio. So is there any thought process wherein we want to reduce the R&D significantly for Taro?
Is your question, is the R&D to be reduced for Taro?
Right.
Now we have to look at the overall R&D investment. We can't look at separately. We can't run two separate businesses, no? It's now part of Sun. So
right.
We have to look at the holistic R&D capability and R&D spend.
So, I mean, my question was also related to whether the reduction in the R&D guidance includes some part of this rationalization in R&D, because the portfolio itself was not growing good and it was seeing competition every quarter before we take over.
I don't think your assessment and our understanding is correct. Our understanding is that the new product that Taro used to file and launch justified the money that was spent, but there was a steep price cut across other products which was made up by this, but the overall rate of decline was significantly faster compared to the other products that we had in our portfolio.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Neha Manpuria from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my follow-up. My first question is on M&A. Given that, you know, that's been a core part of our strategy in building out the specialty pipeline so far, just wanted to get your sense on the environment today for specialty assets in the U.S. You know, we've heard about the biotech funding crunch. Big pharma is sort of, looking at assets given they're sort of crunching the R&D. Is it more difficult to get specialty assets, for acquisition? And is that the reason for us, becoming more aggressive in terms of building our own clinical capabilities? Just wanted to understand, the long-term pipeline strategy for the specialty business.
So I think the buildup of the clinical capability is more a function of at which stage we are able to or actually decide to license a product. If we decide to license a product which is, let's say, completed phase 3, then we don't have big assets, I mean, organization. License a product in phase 2 or earlier, then we will need an organization which can bring the product to market from phase 2. So it's all a fun, and our sense is that it's better for us to also look at a mix of products which are close to market or also products that we can develop on our own.
And so is it becoming more difficult for us to get, let's say, near commercial products, for acquisition, in the existing focus areas that we have, ophthalmology, derma, oncology? Is that the sense that you get when you look at, the market, M&A market?
I mean, actually, I have no historical context, so I can't compare that 10 years back it was easier and now it is difficult. But I don't see a situation where if we are interested in an asset, and since our area of focus is relatively narrow, too many competing potential bidders.
Understood. Okay, that's helpful. And my second question is on Ilumya. Because, Ilumya prescription traction, continues to be very good. Obviously, we had skepticism about, biosimilars impacting that. We have another biosimilar launch coming next year. What's essentially driving the growth in Ilumya prescription? And do you think despite these biosimilar launch, we could continue to maintain the growth momentum in Ilumya prescription?
I think many factors go into it, but at the end of the day, it's about execution on the strategies. And it's a multifactorial product sell. It's not an easy sell. And I think we are able to execute on multiple fronts to keep that engine moving.
And you don't think, another biosimilar in one of the larger, other large products, sort of impacts Ilumya prescription growth?
So to be perfectly honest, I mean, we are in the overall market a relatively small player as compared to the big ones.
Yeah.
Any biosimilar will go after the big fish, and
not necessarily where the space that we are playing. So I guess to that extent, I mean, we are relatively insulated as compared to the bigger products.
Understood. Okay. That's helpful. Thanks.
One more issue you need to keep in mind is that the overall penetration of biologics in the market is also relatively low. With biosimilars, we also expect the penetration to go up.
Fair enough. That's a fair point, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from Gagan Thareja from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Good evening. I hope I'm audible.
Yes.
So the first question is, Taro comparable quarter last year, would have been consolidated at 80%, and this year it's fully consolidated. Would that roughly add $25 to $30 million of sales, even if Taro sales wouldn't have grown year on year, simply because of the additional consolidation?
So as part of the transaction, Taro has become part of us. Our overall US sales, what we
earlier also,
were getting separately the Taro.
They were giving separate numbers.
So now it is, we have, since no more a public company part of the Sun, we are just showing the overall net sales of the US business, which includes Taro.
No, I get that, but in principle, I'm simply talking about the arithmetic. 20% extra consolidation would have added to sales, assuming that there is no, precipitous drop in Taro sales at all.
No, there is no impact on the top line post-consolidation, because as a subsidiary, we were capturing the top line. At the end, we were providing for minority interest in the profit.
Okay, I get it. Second question is on, Nidlegy and Ilumetri and, Ilumya in China. Is it possible to give some, some insight into how these have evolved and developed?
No, we do not give country-specific sales detail. Broadly, overall looking at the offtake as well as the projections we are getting from our partner in China, we think that the product is doing quite well.
Okay. This is the final one on the, the post-grant review which went in favor of Insight on patent 335. On the legal document pertaining to that, they seem to indicate that they would be looking for a higher royalty, post if there is an approval for your product. Do you see a circumstance where, payments, royalty payments will be higher than what you have previously anticipated, and therefore, the overall profitability on the product could be different from an initial base case?
You have access to information which I don't have. So, because I haven't seen any disclosure from Insight which says that they're expecting a higher royalty.
No, sir. This is just the transcript of the district court, New Jersey, hearing on this matter in July.
Now, since the matter is sub judice at this point of time, we are not responding to specific questions.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from Saion Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. Sir, I remember some time back, you had mentioned about the regulatory approval on some of your complex products on the generic side in the U.S. There were uncertainties in terms of the regulatory guidelines which were delaying things. In the recent past, we have seen some complex generics getting approved. Has the landscape improved, and to that extent, how do you think about the pipeline for Sun Pharma?
I personally don't recall any such comment or disclosure in any of our calls where we said
we've indicated that there are products for which there is lack of clarity from a regulatory point of view.
Yeah.
I think for the specific product, there would be guidances which will help. And we see an effort by the agency to work towards clarifying and sharing specific guidances so that industry has a greater visibility on the process to follow for approval of those products.
Right. So would you like to comment how does impact Sun? I mean, should we therefore mean that the chances of you sort of crossing the hurdle on the regulatory front is much more now?
No, I think it's very difficult to give non-specific response, but our view is that anything which has greater clarity for industry is always helpful for bringing a generic product to the market early.
Okay. And so my second question, if you can respond, like, on the GLP-1 opportunity, both from the regulated and from an emerging market perspective, how should we think about that and, Sun's preparedness to address that opportunity?
No, I think we are very excited. Only issue is how fast can we bring the product to market and what kind of clinical outcome benefit we are able to show while the product is in registration. That is what will ultimately help us in terms of working towards getting a fair share of the product globally.
Understood. And see the emerging market opportunity, because you're present, have a footprint in most of the markets, the key markets. So you expect that to unfold over the next, say, 2-3 years for you? I mean, much ahead of the regulated market.
Currently, the trial is being done in such a way that we will get approval in regulated and emerging market in a phased manner, but starting with the regulated market. If there is a change in the strategy, we will share that with you. But as on today, that is the approach.
Understood.
And also, another thing which I am sure you are aware is that some of the current GLP-1s will start losing patent protection in emerging market much earlier than the
regulated
market.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Ankush Mahajan from Axis Securities. Please go ahead.
So, congrats for a good set of number. So, I'm just looking at a very good set of number for the specialty. There's a 7.5% growth on Q1Q, which is also. So, if I sir, take a two reasons, like one is the U.S. market and other is other market. So, can we say, sir, that the other market is growing faster for the specialty and still there is a scope that we are looking for the new geographies to enter for the specialty?
You're setting my goals for next year.
I understand the split between U.S. and non-U.S.
So I can only speak on the U.S. business. And I think there, as I said earlier, most of our key products we have grown. Levulan, as you know, this quarter is always a softer quarter. So I believe that, Q3, even that product will come up to where it should be, because that's our traditionally a big quarter for that product. So I think I'm personally confident that we can continue to grow our specialty business in the U.S.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Anubhav Agarwal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, guys. Just last question from me. Just on the ramp-up of the specialty portfolio. So we have derma products, then we added derma oncology products. So just trying to understand how you're thinking about the other oncology products which are not derma onco, and what about ophthalmic? So that's one set of questions. Second set of question is, thereby you mentioned in the press release that you want to leverage your strong cash position to strengthen pipeline portfolio. So largest deal you have done is close to $600 million when we acquired Lexelvi. Are you okay acquiring a platform with a broader thing, or you still want to go drug-wise in these three areas, or you want to expand the scope? Can you give some broad comments here?
No, I think our approach to acquisition is that we need to find a way to manage that business much better than the current owner, and it needs to help us strategically, help us grow our top line and bottom line in a strategic kind of way. So that will continue to remain our priority and focus. I don't want to take a view about the size of the product or the size of the market, because I think it's better for us to play in a market in which we compete for products which are not aggressively competed by big pharma. So we have a relatively small subset, because we are a small company and we need to recognize and reflect that in our action and plan. So, and your question as to whether we will get into pure oncology business, I think as on today, that is not the intention. We will remain, because the moment we get into, let's say, first-line breast cancer or head and neck cancer or anything, we then end up competing with all large companies in the world, and that's where we will not be able to compete.
So, and how about ophthalmology? So we have a dry eye drug, but what about the other areas in ophthalmology?
No, I think we continue to look at opportunities which can enhance our basket in ophthalmology. We are very disciplined about our acquisition approach. Is that we don't get emotionally committed to any product. So unless and until it makes business sense, we don't progress. We haven't unfortunately been able to identify something which is both exciting and something that we think will help us create long-term value.
So just a very nice question, but in dermatology, you think, let's say, with the current pipeline that you have it and the molecules that you're thinking about it, can this be ultimately, not putting a timeline, that if you stay in derma and oncology or derma-oncology segment, can you be like 3x, 4x of the size what you are today, just staying in this derma and derma-oncology therapy?
I mean, you're talking of my desire or what we wish to disclose?
No, possibly.
Because I think as a company, we don't make long-term projections. But I think if we are playing in this field, it is with a view to become successful. And success means different things in different businesses. And for us to be successful, we will have to gain scale in specialty. That there is no confusion. But it's difficult for us to commit timelines as well as this, because otherwise it will end up creating unnecessary pressure for us to do transactions.
Yeah, Dilipa's question was not on timeline actually. I put it wrongly, sorry. The question was simply that, does the derma and derma oncology in terms of molecules that you want to target, that you do not want to, let's say, compete directly with Big Pharma, does the space have so much potential that you can keep launching and becoming 3x, 4x eventually? That was the essence of the question.
I think if you look at our current pipeline, we have a product, oral product, which we are developing for phase 2 for psoriasis. Same product we are also developing for atopic dermatitis. So these are all fairly large market with potential to do much better than what... and augment our relationship with the doctors in the market.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Sudarshan Padmanabhan from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So my question is a little bit more on the housekeeping side. The first half we have seen our gross margin significantly, you know, higher than expectations. I just wanted to know, you know, would we be looking at, say, for the full year, given that the specialty is doing well, the gross margins will trend more towards, 79-80% as compared to what we initially thought.
So we are not giving any specific guidance on gross margins.
Yeah, I think even in the past, people have said whether when will your EBITDA reach 30%. This, I think it's our focus is to find a way to do our business in a way whereby our EBITDA and profitability improves. But that's not the intention. Intention is to grow both top line and bottom line and run business more efficiently.
Sure, sir. And with the R&D spend probably coming back in the second half, I mean, should we be looking at more or less, margins at around 28%, which is what you initially guided for? Or, do we see that the R&D spend can be still a little slower, kind of giving some kind of fillip to the margins in the second half?
So, I think we are not guided for any margins as such. So, we refrain to comment anything based on the margins for H2.
I'll join back.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the last question in queue. I would now like to hand the conference back to Dr. Abhishek Sharma for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining us at this late hour. If any of your questions have remained unanswered, you can reach out to me or Investor Relations team. Thank you and good evening.
Bye.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Sun Pharmaceutical Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.